It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya. Welcome to the Rico. What else is new? The Mets suck. The dead body on the side of the road, it got run over four times by the Chicago Cubs, including a pathetic extra inning loss to make this sweep official. The New York Mets get swept by the Chicago Cubs. And the beat rolls on, and the beat rolls on, and the beat rolls on, the season's done. Well, it was typical. I mean, the Mets end up losing this series to Chicago. They end up getting swept by Chicago, and it ends kind of the way it's gone throughout this series. Bad defense, lack of clutch hitting. I mean, the starting pitching was decent. Freddy Peralta wasn't bad. He was done in by bad defense. And the Mets lose four straight to the Chicago Cubs. I guess the broad stroke on this team is that they're dead. And for most of us, they've been dead for a while, but we hang in there hoping that things will change. These four games against the Chicago Cubs, I've been using the basketball analogy for a while, that this is a basketball game in the first half in which they're trailing between 6 and 10 points. So they're hanging in there, but they're never able to break through. This series was the let go of the rope series, and now it's halftime, and they're getting blown out. And that's where we are at the official or unofficial, however you want to define it, halfway point of this season. If you want to hear about the game one loss, go back two episodes. If you want to hear about the doubleheader patheticness and embarrassment, go back one episode. On this edition of the Rico, we'll talk about the finale of this series. We will talk about the David Peterson trade, the Marcus Semien injury. And yes, we will hand out some awards. The Rico, I'm the man right now, and the net negative. Those two things will be discussed. And I am going to try to read a lot of your depressed emails because obviously this is a sad state of affairs. We are sitting here in late June, and it is very obvious that this season is going nowhere. I think that I have now come to terms that we can do Rico's talking about the trade deadline because this is clearly a sell team. This is not a team that should stand pat. This is not a team that should buy. I mean, I can't even get through that with a straight face. This is a bad baseball team that should sell. And as we get closer to August 3rd, we'll obviously have more discussions about who and what they can get and things of that nature. But as we sit here today, oops, sorry about that. I dropped my camera, which I guess is indicative of the Mets dropping the ball on this season. I apologize. I'll set that up real. Oh, that's not going anywhere. Hold on one second. Yeah, so I guess that's indicative of the way this season has gone. I drop a camera, they drop the ball. Let's focus on this game. I went to this game as the bark in the park, which I have never done in the decade plus that this has gone on. That was definitely a unique experience. I mean, taking my dog to a Met game was... it was different. I like what they did, though. I mean, you get to walk in the outfield, which was kind of cool. And by the way, one thing, hey, Jet, can you make that just a little bit lower? Thank you, my friend. Yeah, Jet was at the game. Both my sons were at the game, and the dogs had a good time. The dogs were very well behaved. I was surprised by that. But as I sat down in the Coca-Cola corner, I'll always call it the Pepsi corner, because that's what it initially was. It was certainly a different vantage point to watch this game. The positive was early on, Freddy Peralta threw the baseball well. Like, he got through the leadoff hit he gave up in the first inning, struck out a couple of guys in the second inning, pitched well in the third, pitched well in the fourth. I mean, really through five, Freddy Peralta was in complete control. And that was nice to see because when Freddy gets bombed, the way he got bombed last weekend in Philadelphia, one of the concerns that jumps into your head is he healthy? Is there something wrong with Freddy Peralta? And as we said at the top of this, Rico, this is inevitably going to be a team that sells, and Freddy Peralta will inevitably be one of the guys that the Mets trade. To me, that is a no-brainer. So you don't need him getting hurt. You don't need him killing his value any more than he may or already have killed it. So I thought this was encouraging by him. He threw the five scoreless innings. And then in the sixth inning, you get the bugaboo of the Mets recently. I can't say the Mets have been a bad defensive team all year long. That wouldn't be fair necessarily. I know that every time the Mets have had a miscue this season, we always scream run prevention, run prevention. But I think that's more of our way of kind of lashing out at David Stearns, being pissed at David Stearns, a guy who built this mess. I don't think, for the most part, the defense has been their biggest issue. Their biggest issue has been not scoring runs, at least for the majority of the season. And obviously, recently, the starting pitching has been bad. But in this series against Chicago, and obviously the six-error game jumps out at you, the defense has been atrocious. Now, in this case, it's Ronnie Mauricio. Ronnie Mauricio started this game at shortstop because, dare I say, Lindor play back-to-back games. I guess that's the negative of rushing a guy back with barely playing any rehab, that you're not going to push him to play every day, every day. So they start Ronnie Mauricio at shortstop. We need to see Ronnie Mauricio. We need to evaluate Ronnie Mauricio. And flat out on a backhand play, he made a bad throw. Now, I would argue that if you have a competent first baseman, if you have, dare I say, a real first baseman, if let's say, let me just name a random former Met first baseman, and no, I'm not going to do Pete Alonso. Let's say Rico Bronya was the first baseman. He puts that bad throw in his back pocket. Good defense at first base matters because you clean up bad throws like that. I am convinced Mark Teixeira basically helped Derek Jeter late in his career by being a vacuum cleaner at first base. Mark Vientos is not a first baseman. I don't know what he is. I mean, Buck Showalter was probably right 3-4 years ago when essentially he confirmed he's a designated hitter. Mark Vientos has to scoop that ball. So it's an error on Ronnie Mauricio. It's a bad throw by Ronnie Mauricio, but Mark Vientos needs to scoop that. With that said, errors suck. But if you're Freddy Peralta and you are an quote-unquote ace, even though he came into this start with an ERA near 5, obviously his last outing against the Phillies had a lot to do with that, you have a chance to make up for the bad defense. But instead, Michael Conforto's ripping a baseball into the right field corner for an RBI single. With 2 outs, instead, he's giving up an RBI double to Alex Bregman and an RBI single to Ian Happ. So we can call them unearned, and we could talk about how it was the Met defense that opened up the floodgates in the sixth inning. But if we're being fair, Freddy Peralta had a chance to get through that inning, and he failed. And after he walked Nico Hoerner on 4 pitches, Carlos Mendoza had no choice but to pull him from this game. And unfortunately for Freddy, there will be no parade, as Howie Rose once said. He wants a parade for going 6. Well, he couldn't complete 6. And again, yes, Ronnie Mauricio made a bad throw. And yes, Mark Vientos, if he's a capable first baseman, scoops that ball. But Freddy Peralta, with 2 outs, gave up back-to-back 2-out RBI hits to Alex Bregman and Ian Happ, and he turned what could have been a really good performance into, in my opinion, a very mediocre 5 2/3 innings. I don't care how many of those runs were earned. He still allowed the back-to-back hits that allowed a 1-0 game to become 2-0 and 3-0. And you even, you know, why not tack on another error with Carson Bench having a tough time picking up that double up by Alex Bregman in the sixth inning. So the defense continues to be bad. Freddy Peralta continues to be underwhelming. And then the magic dose of an offense that in this case against Matthew Boyd and the Chicago bullpen, this was not an example of the Mets just being LD, of the Mets just being mowed down, which we've seen a lot of. This is about missed opportunities. They had men on base and runners in scoring position. It felt like every inning. They had a runner on in the first. It went nowhere. They had the leadoff man on in the second after Francisco Alvarez had a really good at-bat, fighting back from down 0-2, and A.J. Ewing bounced into a double play. They put together a 2-out rally in the third before Mark Vientos, with the bases loaded, popped one up to third base. They put together a 2-out rally in the fourth inning, had 2 on and 2 out before Brett Beatty rolled one over and grounded out to second. They had guys on base in the fifth. They had guys on base in the sixth. And in the sixth is when they rallied. They responded to being down 3-0 because Eric Wagaman hit that 2-run home run. Fine move by Mendy. He pinch hits for Melendez with Wagaman. Once Craig Counsell went to the lefty, Hobie Milner. And Wagaman, great job. It's a 2-run home run. Fantastic. And the Mets are putting together this 2-out rally. Bo Bichette gets hit by a pitch. And they have the bases loaded and 2 outs for Juan Soto. And I feel like I have to clarify a bash job of Juan Soto, who is the Mets' best player. And he is, no doubt. He is an all-star. He is Juan Soto. I am so glad he's a New York Met.
even if they have sucked since basically 80% of his time here. It is not completely Juan Soto's fault. And Juan Soto comes back after missing a day and a half with this back issue, and he has two Juan Soto-esque at-bats, really three in a row to start this game. Back-to-back walks in the first and third inning, and a two-out single in the fifth inning. It's like, all right, Juan Soto didn't miss a beat. Back issue, no problem. And in the sixth inning, down 3-2, bases loaded, two out against Phil Maton, the former Met, the opportunity finds him. And the buzz is palpable as Juan Soto comes up. And again, you're thinking to yourself, even though this team is 12 games under 500, now 13, but at the time 12, maybe this is his moment. Maybe this is the hit. This is the hit that's going to turn the season around. This is the big moment Juan Soto is going to have. Because the truth is, and I've said this a lot about Juan, he's been productive. I still have faith that long term, this will be a great free agent signing. But he just lacks the big hit. That's been the biggest issue with Soto since he's been here. And it's not about Juan Solo or saying he only hits solo home runs. It's about the big moments and him just not finding them. And in the sixth inning of a 3-2 game with the Mets having a chance to immediately respond to that ugly sixth inning, he hit the ball hard. That's the caveat, right? It's 102 miles an hour. It's bad luck, Ev. What are you going to do? He hits a ground ball right at Nico Horner. And it feels like bad luck, or whatever you want to call it, always finds Juan Soto. And then in the ninth, and I went back and heard that Gary Cohen made a point to say that Juan Soto, can you believe it, has never hit a walk-off home run. And in the bottom of the ninth inning of a tie game, wouldn't that have been nice? Or wouldn't it have been nice for him to, I don't know, lead off the ninth inning with a walk or a double or anything? And instead he grounds out. And so there are many reasons why the Mets lost this game. Many, many, many reasons. Pete Crow Armstrong gets the game-winning hit in the 10th. The Mets can't advance the runner in the 10th with the Manfred man on second base. And it unfortunately ends with Carson Benj grounding out to end it. But Juan Soto came up small. I'm sorry, that's part of the story. It's part of what happened in this game. It's a part of why the Mets are sitting here 13 games under 500. He is putting up numbers. He's an all-star. I'm glad he's a Met, but man, it feels like these big moments just escape Juan Soto. And the Mets lose. And it was a very, I'd say we're numb at this point, just numb with these losses because they just keep piling up and piling up. And they're obviously putting themselves in a situation in which they can't get out of it. But Juan Soto is one of the things I think about when I ponder what happened on Thursday, June 25th. I think of his inability to get the big hit. And that sucks. He was on base three times in this game. And yes, he hit the ball hard when he came up with the bases loaded in the sixth inning, but he hit it right at somebody. The positive is Luke Weaver. I mean, Luke Weaver continues to be just unbelievable. He's unhittable at this point. He not only doesn't give up any runs, but he comes into this game facing the heart of the Cub order in the eighth inning of a tie game, and he strikes out the side. So that was very impressive. Jared Young comes off the bench, hits the game-tying home run in the seventh inning after Soto came up small. But again, after A.J. Ewing gets the one-out single and steal second, two opportunities from Ronnie Mauricio and Eric Wagaman to take the lead, and the offense comes up small, and they end up leaving a country on base. So what happened in the fourth game of this series? It's a little bit of everything. A little bit of bad defense, a little bit of a starting pitcher who couldn't finish the job, and then a lot of the same old we've seen over the last 2 years, and that's the inability to get the big hit. And you put it all together, and we have a team that's 13 games under 500. And we have a team that at the 81-game mark is on pace to go 68-94. 68-94, which would be worse than the 1992 Mets, aptly called the worst team money could buy. I like to offer solutions here on the Rico. I think when we did the Rico the other day after the doubleheader sweep, the solution is always fire the manager. You got to do something. You can't just let this continue. They are letting this continue. This owner, this team president, they have let it continue. And I think when we define 2026, and we'll have a lot of time to do it because based on the latest MLB offer to the players when it comes to the CBA, there's going to be a lockout. And that's going to make off-season Ricos even more depressing because we got even more time to recap what the hell happened in 2026. But one of the things that happened in 2026, besides the off-season that led to this, besides the lack of development from young players that they needed to see, this front office allowed this to continue and did nothing. They never tried to spark the team by firing the manager. They never, I'd say fire coaches. That would be crazy considering they fired them before the season or at the end of last season and hired a whole new coaching staff. But they haven't really tried anything. I mean, what do you want to tell me? Shipping off David Peterson for a single A player is trying something? And so that's part of what is so depressing about this. But the other thing is, I don't know how many people out there are going to continue to care about this team into July and August. I think we've probably lost some people that don't care anymore. Maybe the doubleheader was the final nail. But that is, that should not happen in a baseball season, and that should not happen in a baseball season in New York when you have this kind of payroll, where it's one thing to have a disappointing year. Last year was a massively disappointing year. It's one thing to not even make the playoffs. But to be so buried and out of it before we get to the 4th of July, that should not happen. It cannot happen, but it is happening. That's what we're watching right now, the state of the 2026 New York Mets. Couple of thoughts before we get to your emails, and we'll obviously pick a Rico, I'm the man right now, star of the series, and a net negative. Two moves. Number one, the David Peterson trade. We did a Rico on Wednesday night after the doubleheader, and I went to bed, and I had no idea that the Mets were going to make a trade. So we never had an instant reaction to the Peterson trade. But they do trade David Peterson to Chicago. So he was across the dugout today for a young player named Cole Mathis. Cole Mathis is currently on the injured list. He is a 6'2", 210-pound right-handed hitter. He's 22 years old. He was a second-round pick only 2 years ago. So very young. And he was taken 2 years ago out of high school. So he's a very, very young player. Sorry, I was putting my tablet in the way. I'm just pulling up his stats so we could see, well, what has Cole Mathis done this season? He's been at low A at Myrtle Beach and then high A at South Bend, Indiana. So he has not gotten above single A yet. By the way, I should say he did play at college. He went to the College of Charleston. But so far this season, in Myrtle Beach, 294 with seven home runs and a 1,200 OPS in 14 games. Pretty good. And then up in South Bend in high A, 260, 860 OPS, three home runs, 22 RBIs. So I think it's still too early to tell, you know, how highly regarded this kid should be because he's a ways away. But looking at his numbers, he was also a two-way player. He also pitched when he was at the College of Charleston. So I don't think he's not doing that anymore. We're not getting an Ohtani situation. But he did pitch, and he is a first baseman, predominantly a first baseman that's also played third base. What do I think of the return? I couldn't imagine that they were going to get a good return for David Peterson based on how bad he's been this season. And based on the Mets' urgency to say, let's move on from him. So it's a young player. It's a second-round pick from 2 years ago. Who knows? Maybe we get lucky and this turns out to be one of the jewels that we never saw coming. But I think what it says is that the Mets identified that David Peterson, who was the longest tenured Met until this trade, they identified here in his contract year, it just isn't going to happen. And that's a failure of this coaching staff. Like, why are the Mets bad is such a great question. They are not simply bad because of the offseason. That's what we like to bring up. It's what we like to talk about. It's what we're still angry about. But David Peterson not developing and not building off of being an all-star last year is a big reason why the Mets are bad. The fact that there are tons of emails complaining about Brett Beatty's existence and Mark Vientos' existence is, again, another reason why the Mets are bad. And what's tough about this is, all right, who do you blame? These guys have been given ample opportunity, Vientos, Beatty, and Vientos, Beatty, and Peterson. We'll get to Alvarez in a second, but I'll focus on these three guys. I don't think the jury's out on these three guys anymore. They have played enough. They have given us some positives. Again, David Peterson was an all-star last year, and I won't forget what he did in 2024, pitching out of the bullpen, especially in that Pete Alonso-Milwaukee game, and shutting the door. So he had his moments, but he regressed. He regressed to a point where he couldn't remain in the rotation. And so what I ask, and it's merely a question, is why? That's the question for David Stearns, the man from Milwaukee. Why? Because team presidents are not just in charge of acquiring players or signing free agents or making the decisions we spend so much time on. It's about developing the players on your roster. Why did David Peterson go from being an all-star to falling off the rooftop in the last five starts of last year to what happened now, where he unceremoniously got dumped for a single-A player? Why did he go backwards? Why did David Peterson ultimately fail as a New York Met? And what will be an indictment on Stearns and this coaching staff is if he does go to Chicago and figure it out. But I think Vientos and Beatty are in the exact same boat. They have gotten ample opportunity. There's been some signs of growth, some signs of, oh, maybe we have something. But I think at this point, we know what these guys are. And I'll tell you exactly what I think they are. Because I'm not telling you the Mets have to just dump Mark Vientos or dump Brett Beatty or DFA either guy. Here's what I've kind of come to the conclusion on both guys. They're bench players. Are they major leaguers? Yeah, I think Mark Vientos can be a useful major leaguer as a right-handed bat off the bench. That's what he is. What is Brett Beatty? Credit to Brett Beatty. He's learned a million different positions. He can play third base, second base, first base. He doesn't play the outfield very well, but he can. And so that kind of versatility can be used at the major league level. I don't know if that's going to happen with this team, but if you ask me right now, after years now of watching both of those guys, what are they? That's my answer. And to some people listening, they're going to say, you're overrating them. Just cut them. And some people may say, come on, Ev, they're better than that. Vientos, 2024, he was a rock star. We have seen enough. I have seen enough to not say they're minor leaguers, to not even say they got to cut them, but they're bench pieces. Now, why do I say all that? I say all that because we are now entering a half of a season where all we should do is evaluate what's on this roster. We have moved ever so closely to saying there's no point of Eric Wagaman. There's no point of pinch hitting AJ Ewing late in the game because there's a tough lefty on the mound. 3 days ago, I understood it. 3 days ago, I said, hey, you got to win baseball games. You got to put whatever is the best matchup out on the field. Well, we're 81 games into the season. This team is 13 games under 500. And I've moved to the point where, no, I actually have to evaluate the relatively young players on this roster. I don't want to see Eric Wagaman pinch hitting for AJ Ewing. I don't mind Eric Wagaman pinch hitting for MJ Melendez. But Eric Wagaman now, and I hate to use him as this example because he's done nothing wrong, but Eric Wagaman is now that typical veteran player on a forgettable Met team. You know who he is? I'm just going to name you a random veteran that you probably forgot existed on a Met team. He's Nori Aoki. That's who Eric Wagaman is. Remember Nori Aoki? Hoff, do you remember Norichi Aoki? I think that was his full first name, Norichi.
How could I forget the one and only Mr. Aoki?
Yeah. Are you screwing with me or do you remember him?
No, of course. I mean, what year was this? 2019?
I was going to guess either 2018 or, yeah, I was going to guess 2018, but now I'm going to look it up because I want to see if I was right. But that's what I think of Eric Wagaman. It's no knock on him. By the way, the answer to the Nori Aoki question is 2017. So we were 1 year off, but he played 27 games in 2017 as a 35-year-old outfielder. And by the way, wasn't even bad, but he was a meaningless, forgettable veteran Met on a bad team. And that's what Eric Wagemann is. And now, as we've hit the halfway point, and I don't know if you've gotten to this place yet, Hoff, but I'm at the place of, no, I need to evaluate young players because God knows this season is done and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, I've been on that for a while now. Like, I don't, and no offense to, like, I know Jared Young hit another home run, which I'm waiting to hear them sign him to, like, a three-year deal and be like, hey, you know, we've reached agreement. We're going to have him on the team for, you know, 3 years because he's a good bench piece who plays every day. But that being said, I need to see the young kids. I mean, call up Morabito again. I'm happy Mauricio's here. Dude, same thing with the pitching. Just give me the young kids. Who cares about these old veterans? I don't care.
And we're starting to see that because when they traded David Peterson, the question was, okay, we know Christian Scott has taken Kodai Senga's spot in the rotation now that Scott is healthy and Senga was moved to the bullpen. Who would take David Peterson's? And the answer is Zach Thornton. And even though Zach Thornton was not overly impressive in his one start and has not lit up the world in AAA, he is that young arm. And that is the answer. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to get a good answer. It doesn't mean Zach Thornton is ready. But anyone who takes the baseball for the Mets the rest of the way, they got to be young. That's what this season is now becoming. It's got to be evaluating. The other thing that happened right before the finale of this series against Chicago is that Marcus Semien went on the injured list. Marcus Semien on Wednesday in the second game of the doubleheader had such a bad performance. This is how bad he was that I actually started to feel bad. And I shouldn't. I mean, he's making a ton of money. He's had a fine major league career. His head will be fine on the pillow, but it was that bad. And Gary and Ron on the broadcast were talking about, boy, wouldn't it help him to get an off day? I've talked about that a lot here on the Rico, that he shouldn't be an everyday player. And so when I first heard he was going on the IL, I think the assumption I and others made was, is this even real? Is this a Billy Epler fake IL spot? Look, Marcus Semien's an older player. He's played every day. I'm not questioning if he has a hip infringement or whatever the injury actually is. But I admit when I heard he was going on the IL, I kind of shrugged my shoulders and said, whatever. Whatever. Now, what sucks about Semien is he's not going anywhere. You know, Eric Wagemann is a passing ship in the night. He won't be on this team in the future, which is a part of why he's Nori Aoki, part of the reason why I don't really need to see much more of him. Marcus Semien may be old and he may be bad, but he is signed for the next few years and he's very likely to be on this team. So it's not as if he'll go on the IL and we'll never see him again. It's he'll go on the IL and it'll create new opportunities, but we will see him again. What I would do at second base is very, very simple. Ronnie Mauricio needs the chance. We have seen a lot of Mark Vientos. We have seen a lot of Brett Beatty, which is why I've come to that conclusion that I think most of us have come with both those guys. And now it's Mauricio's time. It's Ronnie Mauricio's time to just play every single day. And the Mets have the room to do it. And right now it should be second base. That should be his position. We saw him play shortstop on Thursday because they're still slowly bringing Francisco Lindor back. But my assumption is Lindor is eventually going to play most days. And Ronnie Mauricio should just play every day. What is he going to do with that opportunity? I have no idea. I don't think any of us do. But he's a switch hitter. He should get out every at-bat, even against lefties, from the right side of the plate where he struggled. He should move all over the diamond. I don't think you have to give him one position. In fact, heck, play him at first base. I know he hasn't done that yet, but ask yourself this. Could he be worse than Mark Vientos? They're already playing guys out of position. What's the difference? That's kind of my view on it. But Ronnie should get this chance. As far as AJ Ewing playing second base, the only question I have about Ewing playing second base is do we think that hurts his development in terms of continuing to blossom as an elite level defender in center field? Like, I don't mind him playing second base because versatility is great. And as we shift towards thinking about the offseason next year and the year after that, having guys that can move from position to position is great because it gives you the flexibility in case an elite level center fielder becomes available. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know what would fit this roster? That guy. And we could always move AJ Ewing back to second base. So that's the value of him playing a little bit of second base, that you keep that muscle memory intact just in case the offseason dictates something like that. But Marcus Semien going down on the injured list is good for two reasons. A, we get a break from him because we need one. And then B, it creates opportunities for other players. Now, let's read some of your emails, therico@gmail.com. Kevin writes, "Hey, Evan, I'm watching you on YouTube. You should turn that Met light sign on behind you." Let me find the remote, and then I can do that. I do have a Met light behind me that I was going to light up when they actually win games, but they suck, so I haven't lit it up in a while. And I can't find the remote. So much like the Mets can't find their balls, I can't find the remote. So sorry about that, but appreciate the email. Anthony writes, "Evan, I don't know how you keep this up. I give you a lot of credit for coming on with the same results every night. Starting pitching not good, but the hitting is what is killing them. The team goes innings without scoring. They never come through when it's needed. Tonight, the turning point was when our $800 million player, Juan Soto, came up with the bases loaded and grounds out the second. He's not a clutch player and will never be. He fleeced the Mets. This team needs leadership, and he gives them none." I know that as a Met fan, it is easy to say he hasn't been clutch for us, and I think that is a fair statement, because he hasn't in the year and a half he's been here. But the guy basically carried the Yankees to the World Series and hit this incredible home run in game 5 of the ALCS. I can't say he's not a clutch player. Has he done it for us enough? No, he hasn't. We need more of it. And I agree with you, the sixth inning felt like such a big moment for him and such a big moment in this game, and he came up small, but I can't definitively say he's just not a clutch player. Ryan writes, "Hey, Evan, it's shocking that loss after loss, nobody's held accountable. We gutted our coaching staff but left the manager, who he should have fired last season. At this point, I still think he has a job because they dug themselves too deep of a hole for a manager change, even if drastic, to make a difference. The season is over. Cohen's hiding, and Stearns is a smug know-it-all. Boo." Yeah, I mean, right now, a managerial change, something I would have been in favor of, does feel too little too late. It really does. And I think if they change the manager, let's say they did that. Let's say this four-game series and dropping a season-high 13 games under 500 is enough for David Stearns and Steve Cohen to say, "All right, we're going to fire Carlos Mendoza. We're going to put him out of his misery." I think one of our first reactions would be, why did you wait so long? Why did you wait until the cat was so out of the barn that you put yourself in such a hole? I mean, they really did. Like, we're now in the spot halfway through the season where even if you believed in the talent on this roster, which I don't, and I haven't since, I'd say, late April. I certainly won't say I saw this coming at the beginning of the year because I thought they would win 87 games. So obviously, I thought they were better than this. But I jumped to a negative conclusion early on. I didn't do that in 2024. I believed in them in 2024, even 2023. Like many other years that were either good or bad, I had more faith in. But even if you had faith in this team, unlike 2024, I think the hole they put themselves in is just, it's too massive. Like, I know I don't like doing the whole, well, you'd have to have this record to do that. But they're 13 games under 500, 81 games into the season. If they played at the exact opposite pace, which is a 47-34 record the rest of the way, which is a 94 win pace, if they play at a 94 win pace for the next half of the season, they still only be a 500 team. That's why, even if you believed in them, even if you said, "Oh, back of the baseball card, oh, this, that," which, by the way, none of us believe, unless you're, you know, high like Positive Tommy, none of us actually believe that. But even if you did, there's not enough time. That's the kind of hole they put themselves in. Harry writes, "Hi, Evan, big fan, very curious to get your take. I've never heard anyone this season mention just one fact about Bo Bichette. He's coming from a team that was really stacked offensively and had a lot of protection. Because of that, you think he could have inflated how good he really is as a hitter? Regarding the roster, the trades were definitely questionable. I think they got bad value for them. But in terms of free agents, there were really a lot of good players that Stearns could have gotten? I don't hear people mention either that. So I guess your point is, free agent-wise, what should they have done? Well, Kyle Tucker hasn't worked out. So, you know, if it was Kyle Tucker, what would we be saying? I mean, Cody Bellinger has had a really good year for the Yankees, and he was always a guy that seemed like a very, very good fit. Back to your Bo Bichette point, I think protection matters. No question about it. And in fairness, Bo Bichette has been offered really good protection this year. He's hit in front of Juan Soto for a big chunk of the year. So, yeah, in Toronto, you have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Last year, George Springer had a great year hitting ahead of him, and sometimes protection can come from before you and after you, as we saw last year with Alonso. But I don't exactly think he's in some kind of horrible spot here. I mean, he's got Juan Soto protecting him. I want to thank my guy Howard. Howard will write us with all the stats from a series. And so this is the second straight series finale, Rico, in which I didn't do the work because I knew Howard would do it for me. And I appreciate that, especially when I went to the finale of this series on Bark at the Park night. So let's go through Howard's numbers and determine the Rico I'm the Man Right Now star of the series and the net negative. His recommendation is Francisco Alvarez as the star and Marcus Semien as the negative. If we go over the numbers in this series, Jared Young went 2-for-7, hit two home runs and three RBIs, including the game-tying home run in Game 4 of this series. Francisco Alvarez ended up going 5-for-15 with three home runs and five RBIs. Bo Bichette ended up going 6-for-16 with three RBIs, ends up hitting .375. Outside of that, there was a lot of negatives. A.J. Ewing, 2-for-10. Eric Wagaman, 2-for-9, but did hit a home run. Mark Vientos, 1-for-10 with that one home run. Juan Soto ended up going only 1-for-5, obviously missed time due to the injury. Carson Benj, 4-for-17. Brett Beatty, 2-for-11. Marcus Semien, 1-for-11, obviously had the bad defense in the second game of the doubleheader. Without ever looking at the numbers, and this is a tough one because they lost all four games, so it's one of those cases where most people are going to yell at me and say, Evan, you should not name a Rico I'm the Man Right Now. But my OCD as a Rico-er, we have to name a star. And even before looking at the numbers, I said this the other day, it really is Francisco Alvarez. Francisco Alvarez offensively had some very good moments. He ends up going in the finale of this series 0-for-3, but he did have that really good at-bat in the second inning when he was behind in the count 0-2 and drew a walk. He hit a home run in game 2, or of the doubleheader, game 3 of this series. In the game before that, he hit a home run and got on base 3 times. And in the game before that, the opener of this series, Francisco Alvarez hit a home run and also had the 2-run single in the second inning. So he got a lot of big hits. Now, the negative for Alvarez was that his at-bats in the second game of the doubleheader, game 3 of this series, he had some really bad at-bats. Like when he came up in the sixth inning, and then he came up with a man on base in the eighth inning, and at that point, you know, it's still sort of a game, he's flailing at pitches out of the strike zone. So those two at-bats were bad. I had one emailer tell me that those at-bats were disqualifying. But if you at least agree with me that there's got to be a positive, there's got to be an I'm the Man Right Now. I mean, you could give it to Luke Weaver, who continues to be great. I would have no problem with that. You can give it to a guy like Waskar Brazoban. But I do think it's Francisco Alvarez. I think Francisco Alvarez's bat was very valuable in this series. And so, Hoff, you agree, or is there someone else that you would kind of give credit to in terms of the I'm the Man Right Now, unfortunately, in a series in which they got swept?
You mean Jared Young doesn't deserve it? To be fair, I was going to go Luke Weaver, because I just think that he keeps on. He is the one consistent piece we have. I mean, even after errors, even after misplays, he still goes out there and shuts it down. So I feel like out of anybody, you got to give it to the guy that's consistent. And he's in there. he was in there how many times this series?
He's twice.
At least twice.
Yeah, yeah, twice. Yeah, I give him honorable mention, but it's Alvarez. We can't use our bias against him and, you know, whatever one thinks of Francisco Alvarez. Like I always say, when we're talking about a series, we're talking about a series. It doesn't mean we're putting the guy in the Hall of Fame. It doesn't mean we're giving him a contract extension. The guy hit a bunch of home runs in this series. The guy had that big two-run single in game one. Not all his at-bats were great. That's why I mentioned what happened at the end of game three of this series, game two of the doubleheader. I don't want to ignore those last two strikeouts. But overall, when you have a series like Francisco Alvarez had, in which you hit three home runs, you're driving five runs, you hit over 300, I think that you're being a hater if you don't just agree he's the man right now. So say it. Say it. I'm the man right now.
I'm the man right now. It's not a hater, by the way. It's just more of a – I don't know what happened to my screen, but it's just more of a – I think Luke Weaver is been the one key that continues to go out there and shine. And Alvarez had a great series. I'm not going to deny it, but again, like sometimes he's off too, but whatever. That's okay.
Maybe it's the way
he runs.
No, I think what it is with Alvarez, and he's a more interesting conversation than Beatty and Vientos at this point. We've all come to conclusions on Beatty and Vientos and Peterson, who obviously got traded. And I think most of us are done with Brett Beatty. We're done with Mark Vientos. Even if you agree with me that they're bench players, you're still done with them as ever becoming stars. And I think Alvarez is another guy that we want to come to a conclusion on. We want to say we've seen enough of him. And I think, unfortunately, with Alvarez, because of his injuries, which is a part of his resume, I still don't think we have the full answer. Like, I still look at Francisco Alvarez as a guy who has great potential. It doesn't mean I would never move him. It doesn't mean they shouldn't look for upgrades behind the plate. But I think the conclusion on Alvarez is still not there. And he's a frustrating player because he's very inconsistent offensively. He's even inconsistent defensively. And he doesn't stay healthy on a consistent enough basis. Like, my goal for Alvarez now, the rest of the way, is to stay healthy. I want him to – I know he's not going to play all 81 games, but I like him DHing. I don't mind that. And of the final 81 games, I want to see him play 65 of them. Like, I don't want to see him miss more time. If Alvarez goes back on the IL, I think we just have to accept that. I mean, maybe we should already. He's just an injury-prone player, and that's always going to be him. So what I want to see from the second half of Alvarez, besides, yes, building on the offense, is stay out there. Stay healthy. But he was great in this series offensively, so I overrule you. I'm the man right now.
That's fine. Just one more thing, too. How is he with the starting pitching? Well, did they have any hiccups at all? Were they awful? Were they good with him? Because I think that's part of it too. You know, his defense, you're right, is taking a hit. And lastly, too, just you know who he really reminds me of right now? Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah,
d'Arnaud was that guy that you just never saw him healthy, and you had to move on from him, and then he went and won a World Series.
So. Yeah. Yeah. You know what I want to do with guys like that? And it's very tough to do. I've said this a lot about Volpe with the Yankees. I think with guys who have great potential, who either just can't stay on the field or they're too inconsistent, is I minimize their roles. And I say, all right, like, I don't have to get rid of you. I don't have to trade you. Like, you can't exist. But I have to rely on you less. And so with a guy like Alvarez, and I love Luis Torrens, so it's more of an off-season discussion, and there's not a lot of great catchers out there. But what I would do before I ever got rid of him is just minimize him a little bit and say, I'm going to get a catcher who I'm going to play a lot more. Like, I'm going to bring somebody in who's really going to challenge you. Now, you could argue that that's already Luis Torrens, and maybe that's just the way things should be managed over the next half of the season or even beyond. But that's, and I'm even saying that about Vientos, because take emotion aside, and I know it's very difficult to do with guys that you watch so often, and I do compare it with Yankee fans and Volpe and even Met fans with Travis d'Arnaud back in the day. If Mark Vientos just becomes a specialized right-handed bat off the bench, and you don't get caught up when he's hot, you're just like, yeah, no, he's a right-handed bat off the bench. He's gonna face a tough lefty off the bench. He'll DH here and there, like that's who he is. That is an acceptable role as a major league player. And that's something I think he can do. But I think we have a very difficult time with guys who were once prospects or guys we once believed in. ever just accepting them in a lesser role. And that's what I think you should do with players like that.
Well, the Francisco Alvarez thing, you know, it's not even like, hey, we don't think he's, you know, a good enough batter, you know, and hey, let's split the time with him and whatnot. It's like when he's healthy, he hits well. He just can't stay healthy, and he plays a position where it causes him to get injured. Why not bring in someone that's going to split the time evenly or maybe more and let him hit more? Like, it's all related. Like, the idiocy that we couldn't have gone and got somebody to make, like, Alvarez is the almost backup catcher. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And use him as the DH.
Well, I think we're starting to see that a lot more where Torrens catches and Alvarez DHs, and I don't hate it. Like, right. Obviously you lose a little bit of flexibility late in the game if you ever want to pinch hit for Torrens, but we've seen Torrens pinch hit for Brett Beatty late in games that he's relied upon enough to actually be a right-handed bat off the bench. I think we're going to see more of that over the next few weeks and months where both catchers are playing at the same time. And I don't hate that. Let's pick a net negative. So there are three guys that jump out at me for the net negative. Number one is Marcus Semien. His defense in game two of the doubleheader was atrocious. And offensively, he did nothing in this series before going on the IL. So I think he's candidate number one. Candidate number two is Kodai Senga. I mean, really, you could look at all the starting pitchers from this series and say, take your pick. 3 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 7 runs, 2 home runs, a hit batsman. I mean, you could argue Nolan McClain for blowing a 3-0 lead and then giving up 6 runs. Sean Manaea wasn't great. And obviously, Freddy Peralta had his mini implosion in the 6th inning. But I think of the starting pitchers, it's Senga. And then the other guy is Brooks Raley. Brooks Raley has not been the same guy. He got the loss a couple of games ago when he came into a tie game in the 6th inning. And he got the loss in this extra inning game in which he allowed the Pete Crow Armstrong 1-out RBI double. So I think it's Raley, it's Senga, and it's Semien as your 3 candidates. A part of me wants to give it to Raley. Like, I think we almost forget that out of the bullpen, he lost 2 games in this series. Like, he was not good and hasn't really been very good since his awesome start. So I think it's one of those 3 guys. What say you?
I mean, I feel like everyone was so bad, it's tough to just only signal those 3. Because, like, Vientos was just awful defensively. Like,
yeah,
the errors were outrageous. And just for honorable mention's sake, and when you said it yesterday, the way that you broke down the play, I couldn't stop laughing. I rewound it and watched it 3 times. Brett Beatty making that play in the outfield, like, just running into the wall. That alone was like, just for that, give it to him. But I would say out of the 3 that you chose, it's got to be Semien. He's so bad.
Yeah. I mean, the defense was atrocious. I actually don't want to give it to Senga because at the end of the day, it was 1-4 games and they lost 4 games in this series. I think it's either Semien or Raley. A part of me wants to give it to Raley just because it's like we forget that he contributed to 2 losses. But I think it is Marcus Semien. I do. I think that the defense, and I know part of you wants to feel bad because he's hurt, and I do think it's a legitimate injury and he's trying his hardest, but dude, he dropped the pop-up. And not only, and I mentioned this on the last Rico, there were other miscues that don't get called errors. Like, when you get an out, they're not going to call an error. He didn't turn a double play on a ball that could have been turned. He knocked it down. He booted it. He got an out. Like, it wasn't all good. So I'm going to agree with you, and I'm not going to agree with Howard. He's the guy who sends us all the facts, and I'm going to co-sign that Marcus Semien is the net negative of this series. So let's check the scoreboard. Let's see where we're at with these guys. So Marcus Semien, congratulations. You are now a 4-time net negative.
Wow.
Only one behind Bo Bichette, which I guess says a lot about the guys that were added. In fact, I'm looking at the leaderboard of net negatives. Here are your leaders and see if you notice a trend. Bo Bichette 5, Marcus Semien 4, and then a bunch of guys with two. Freddie Peralta, Tobias Myers, David Peterson, Juan Soto, Mark Vientos, Nolan McLean, and Francisco Lindor. A bunch of guys they added. A lot of acquisitions, if you will, from David Stearns. And the I'm the man right now is Francisco Alvarez. That would be Francisco. Is that his first? Holy crap, I'm looking through this. Yeah. Francisco Alvarez for the very first time is the I'm the man right now.
You know what? We forgot an honorable mention for I'm the man right now. Jorge Polanco ran first to third in warmups.
Oh, and I was like, what? Did I miss something?
Yeah, the SNY was showing he ran from first to third, and I was like, all right, there we go. He did that.
Do you even want him back at this point?
No. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, Luis Robert Jr. I probably want back even less because the outfield feels like, hey, we got this. AJ Ewing, Carson Benge, Juan Soto. You mentioned Nick Morbido could very well come up at some point. Luis Robert Jr. could come up, and I wouldn't even play him. So it feels like a waste. I guess with Polanco, he could DH. And the thing about Polanco is he's signed next year. So he's going to be on the team next season. So him coming back and having some kind of production, I guess, would be relatively nice.
All I hear is, I'm blanking on the name right now, but who's the Jed Lowry? When you say he's here for next year, I hear Jed Lowry all over again. So
yeah, no, I know. Jed Lowry lives in Met history, and so may Jorge Polanco. We look ahead, three games coming up against the Philadelphia Phillies. I am not going to do my normal spiel of, you know, they got to win two out of three or they got to sweep them. I mean, we understand where this season is right now. They're 13 games under 500. They are falling fast. They would need put this in perspective. The Mets are a 10-game winning streak away from still being three games under 500. That's where we are. And it's going to get uglier because Zach Wheeler is starting the Friday night game against Zach Thornton, a battle of the Zachs. And then on Sunday, they get Jesus Luzardo. I'm not familiar with who's pitching Saturday for Philadelphia. And we'll go from there. And I am going to see them in Toronto. I'm very excited to see that. I feel like I was looking back at my history of watching the Mets on the road, and I don't mean like on the road at Yankee Stadium or on the road in Philadelphia, but a further road trip. I have this incredible knack of seeing the Mets on the road when they're having awful seasons. Like when I went to Houston for the first time and saw them play at that ballpark in Arizona, it was bad years. It was one of those 2011 or 2012, I forget the exact year, but one of the years where it was just meaningless. And coincidentally, I'm taking the family to Niagara Falls, and the Mets happen to be in Toronto, a very happy coincidence. And I have never been to Rogers Center. It's one of the only stadiums, I would say, relatively close to us on the Eastern time zone that I have not seen. Never been there. I've only been to Toronto once. I did that for sports. I saw Nets Raptors game 7. Back in 2014. Yeah, 2014. So I'm excited to see the stadium, but boy, oh boy. I mean, what a year to see the Mets on the road. What a year to check them out. But either way, we will have a Rico Bronya from Niagara Falls on Sunday. We will remain loyal. So for anyone who is done with the Mets, done with the team, whatever it is, we're going to Rico through this. We did it in 2023 through some tough times, and we'll do it again. And we'll try to keep you entertained. We'll talk about the games. We'll look ahead. We'll evaluate. So we're here. We here, as they like to say.
Can I ask you one quick question?
Sure.
You know, because you said this is like, we know where the season's going. It's a dead season. It is what it is. The expectations are, we'll take the expectations out of it. Just take it as a season for what it is. This is, to me, can you remember the last time you watched the season? You're like, wow, this is a dead season and there's still 3 months to go. Like, when's the last time you felt that?
I mean, 2023 sort of was that, man. I mean, they sold off in the middle of July. And I think once they were selling off David Robertson and then it turned into obviously Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, we knew it was over. So I think 2023 is not that far off from this. I think what you're forgetting, Hoff, is that we've had a lot of bad years. You know, 2017 was an awful season. 2018 was an awful season. I remember early on in the Terry Collins era, it felt like they got off to good starts at least, and then they would fall apart in June or July. So maybe there'd be a little bit more time of thinking the season existed. I think the difference, it's not when have they had a lost season, because there's been plenty of them. I think it's when have they had a season with the payroll and the expectations and the debate about who's here and not here, and then having a season like this. Because a lot of their bad seasons were forgettable, and they weren't marred by some controversy in terms of a homegrown guy they let go. So the reason 2026 is going to exist in some major way, and again, we'll have a lot of time to talk about this during the offseason, is because of those other things. Not just their record, not just 13 games under 500, not just, hey, it's over by the time you get to July 1st. I think it's everything else that surrounds it. But right now, this is 1992, except worse. I mentioned this very briefly on Evan and Tiki. 1992 was the worst team money could buy. That's what that book is based on. They followed that up the following year in 1993 by having a worse season. But in 1992, the worst team that money could buy, they finished 72-90. This team is on pace to be six games worse. And just to put in perspective, if you go back to June 24th of 1992, they were 35-36. They were just a game under 500. You go back to as late as July 11th, they were 42-45. Actually, let me go further than that. On July 24th, so a month from now, the 1992 Mets, the worst team money could buy, was actually a 500 team. They were 48-48, and that was the line of demarcation where they fell apart. Think about that for a second. The team that is lionized as the worst team money could buy was a 500 team in late July, and then they crumbled. This team is in late June, and they have crumbled well ahead of the 1992 Mets, which is why they're going to surpass it. This is worse than the worst team money could buy. And I'm not just talking about the actual payroll or the expectations. It's the results are far worse. But with all that said, we're still going to be here. So make sure you've subscribed to the Rico Bronya. We always have Ricos at the conclusion of each series, including when the Philly series ends. I told you I'll be at Niagara Falls. I'll try to set up a nice, fun location. That may be a very late night Rico Bronya because, believe it or not, I do put my family first, and we will do family activities. And I will eventually get to the game. So it may be an 11 o'clock or a midnight Rico Bronya, but make sure you're subscribed. You'll never miss it. And then we'll pop up some instant reactions when you least expect it. I am considering, not sure we're going to do it, but I'm considering a cross-the-border Rico Bronya in which we do the Rico while I'm driving back from Canada to Niagara Falls during that Monday Blue Jay Met game. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to be arrested by the Canadian police live on YouTube. So maybe it's not a good idea. I don't know. We'll have to see. Anyhow, great job, Hoff. Great job, everybody listening. We appreciate it. You can always email us, thericob@gmail.com. Thank you for listening to yet another depressing edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.